Hello and welcome to this special SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. This featured podcast is called Security Careers, Surviving and Thriving in Difficult Times. We have two special guests joining us today. Lee Kushner is the president of executive search firm LJ Kushner & Associates, which specializes in information security placements. And Mike Murray is an information security pro and independent security careers coach. Recently, Mike and Lee launched a website and blog for information security careers and career-driven content. You can learn more about it at infosecleaders.com. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Guys, first off, we're very excited about our new partnership. Not only will you write a new monthly column for searchsecurity.com about information security careers issues, but we're also promoting your new podcast seminar series called Career Incident Response. Gentlemen, tell us briefly what that series is all about.
Well, the podcast series that we've created is really out of the need and the recent market conditions that information security professionals are faced with in the basically a challenging economy. And you know, when we found more qualified information security professionals that are currently victims of the economic conditions out there, Mike and I felt it would be very good to create some content that could help people through, just assessing their situation, dealing with the effects of the personal effects that go along with being uprooted in their position, and to take folks through and guide them through the journey of conducting a job search, putting together a resume specific to combat this situation. And then offering them some tips on how to avoid some of the pitfalls that come with interviewing when you're not currently employed.
And our listeners can get more info on Career Incident Response by visiting searchsecurity.com/careerhelp. That's searchsecurity.com/careerhelp. In this conversation, we're going to touch on the many issues that you discuss in great detail in those recordings. But first, we have to start with the state of the economy. How is the market for IT security pros faring right now as of May 2009? And is it getting better or worse?
Well, Eric, unfortunately, I think that the market is a bit stagnant. Companies that have pressing information security staffing and hiring needs are hiring, but there's not a great sense of urgency. Organizations are faced with bigger pressing business issues, focusing on their bottom line and cost containment, and unfortunately that affects staffing more so than anything. The overall slowdown in the economy, the slowdown in the information security services sector, the product sector, and especially in the financial services community, information security professionals are not immune. In the past, security pros have had the luxury of being unaffected because of their specialization. However, as information security becomes more and more ingrained into the IT stack and into the assurance and compliance segments, information security is not given any special treatment. I would like to say that it is getting better, but I believe that only time will tell as market conditions hopefully improve.
Now, it's not always easy to know when one's job may be in jeopardy. What are the signs information security pros should look for?
Well, I think that you have to basically be aware of your surroundings. I think that you have to understand the situation that your company is in. News of slowdowns, layoffs, scandals, decreases in sales. Overall, that's one of the telltale signs that your position may be in jeopardy. There's also probably a decrease in frank communications between management and staff, and people are in a general sense of when the communication slows down, I think it's time to put your antennas up.
Beyond even that, I want to jump in and mention that it's important to know your place on your team as well. In a layoff, you don't often see the entire information security department go away. The core contributors and the real people who add a whole lot of value to the company and to the department are kept over those who are considered some, you know, for lack of a better word, dead weight. So it's important that if you're not one of the people who's adding value, and you have, you know, one of the things we talk about in the incident response series is taking a good hard look at yourself and really understanding where you fit in your team and in your organization. If you're not one of those people who's really adding that kind of value, you better start adding that kind of value real quick.
So advancing that scenario a step further, if someone out there listening to this is concerned about their job security, what specifically should they do? How do they try to demonstrate their value or build more value while preparing for that worst case scenario?
I think it comes down to being the person that solves important problems. And that's, you know, my view on adding value is that companies and departments and organizations always have problems that need to be solved. And if you can be the person that solves those problems, and you can be the person that gets things done, and you can become known as the person who is the go-to person on whether it's one issue or multiple issues, it becomes harder and harder to, when that conversation comes around, and as hiring managers, anyone who's been a hiring manager and gone through a layoff, there's always a conversation. There's always, okay, who can you live without? You want to make sure that you're not the person whose name comes up in the who can you live without conversation. And the way to do that is to make sure that the manager thinks, man, if I get rid of that person, I'm not going to have anybody to do X, Y, and Z. It's about being indispensable on a particular set of problems.
A lot of times, Eric, it's also important, I always tell people that it's important to be noticed when it's time to be noticed, and it's also important to be invisible when it's time to be invisible. You know, this is the time where, you know, you need to work harder than others, and you need to be able, you know, to demonstrate your value that way. And you also have to just really understand what's happening around you. I mean, now is not the time to ask for raises. It's not time to take extended vacation. You know, now is really the time to take on more responsibility and to demonstrate on a daily basis. I mean, hopefully you're doing that already, but now's the time, as Emerald would say, to kick it up a notch.
Fair enough. Okay, let's say a security pro does find him or herself out of work. Obviously, it's a tough situation, but what are the potential positives or things that can be learned from the events? In other words, what's the silver lining?
So I'm the eternal optimist of this group, so I have to jump in on this one. I think there's always a silver lining. Even in the hardest times, there's a lot to be learned, and there's a lot to learn about yourself. One of the things we talk about a lot in the podcast series is the emotional impact of a career incident, whether it's a layoff or the company goes bankrupt or you get terminated. There's a huge emotional impact, and there's a whole process that we have to go through to deal with the feelings and the process of this whole situation. So one of the things we like to focus on is how much you can learn about yourself and about your career and about what's valuable to the market and to the people around you, whether it's your peers, your management, through this kind of process. And to me, it's a real growth process. And nobody wants to go through a career incident, but one of the things that we really focus on is making sure that if you do go through one, you come out of it in much better shape than you went into it.
I mean, Eric, you know, it's important that, you know, you can reflect on your situation, but, you know, you can't really look back and second guess the things that you've done, but you have to learn from your mistakes. And in this type of scenario, you know, you have to start making some better, you look at what's happened and maybe you will start making better choices in whom you're working for. You might be able to, you know, reassess your skill set and figure out which skills are necessary or which skills were kept or which people with the right skills were retained during this situation. And it's really a chance to, you know, to reevaluate your career so when you rebound, you're able to rebound and move forward in a stronger position.
We'll talk more about the resume process and interview tips right after this short break.
Looking to get your CISSP certification, but you're daunted by the cost of training for the exam? Check out searchsecurity.com's CISSP Essentials School. It features 10 lessons covering all of the domains on the CISSP exam. Each lesson offers an exclusive training video featuring Sean Harris, the recognized leader in CISSP training. All the lessons are available on demand for your convenience, and best of all, they're free. So get started today at searchsecurity.com/CISSP Essentials. That's searchsecurity.com/CISSP Essentials.
All right, guys, as we talk about the job search process, it's important to note that there are differences between a short-term search and a lengthy search. What are the most important ones?
Well, you know, Eric, in a short-term search, I think the main driver there is your need for money and your need for capital. And in a short-term search, your speed really will trump accuracy. You also have to start thinking about, what you are willing to do. How we define that is to understand your least common denominators for a search, and that might include anything, including your career, your quality of life parameters, anything dealing with travel, commute, or relocation. In a long-term search, most people who have the luxury of going into a long-term search, it really comes down to somebody who's been able to plan accordingly. And a lot of the characteristics of a long-term search really mirror a search as if you are currently employed. However, there are some exceptions, and a lot of those exceptions arise where, you know, your runway is running out. You know, so as time goes by and your money runs out, you probably have to adjust your expectations to start mirroring more of the characteristics of a short-term job search.
Lee mentioned the idea of runway. I just wanted to jump in and do a quick, you know, that's a term that's probably unfamiliar to a lot of our users, and we talk about it a whole lot, because what really separates the idea of a short-term job search from a long-term one is, can I pay my bills? You know, can I pay the rent at the end of the month, or can I pay the mortgage? Because if you can't, you have to make some sacrifices in terms of what is important to you for your career in order to make sure that that you can get something that will help you feed the family while you're sort of getting back on track with your career. Whereas if you've got, you know, a certain amount of money in the bank and you're paying the bills and everything's okay, you can afford to take a little more time, be a little pickier, and focus on the things that really matter to you and really fit with the plan that you have for your career.
This may go without saying, but obviously it sounds like it's important for information security pros to try to define what kind of search or what the length of their search is at the start of the search process, since I'd imagine it might be common for some information security pros to assume that they're going to get another job relatively quickly and not realize that for one reason or another, be it the economy or their specific skill set, the search might not end as soon as they think.
Without question. I mean, I think that's probably the one thing that is most unique during this time. You know, as a young profession, with the exception of a short period in 2001 and early 2002, there really has not been the need for information security professionals has remained constant. And I think in this situation, people are underestimating the time that it will take to find the position. And, you know, a lot of times folks believe that, don't worry, the right thing will come around the corner, or it's inevitable, or it's sooner than they believe. The truth of the matter is that, opportunities that are in front of them, although they might not be perfect, might be the best available. So I think that they have to have a sense of honesty with themselves about, truly what they're willing to do, and, if they are willing to make some sacrifices for employment.
Now, regardless of the length of the job search, what are the things security pros must do to give them the best shot at success, especially things that may be unique to the industry or that they may not think of doing?
So I think the one thing that most security professionals have done not as well as people in some other industries or people, the less successful among us have done less than others, is really be aware of their personal brand. And it sounds kind of cheesy to talk about personal branding, and it sounds like I'm suggesting that everyone turns into a used car salesman, but really, the people who are going to thrive in this situation are the people who are well-known. I've seen people who I know who have really strong personal brands because they've been bloggers and podcasters, and, you know, they're on Twitter and they're on Facebook, and they've done a really great job of social networking, and they've written articles. These people, I've seen some of them who have been out of, you know, who have had a career incident, and they have turned around and managed to get a job relatively quickly, even in this economy, because they're well-known, and it's well-known what they can do. Whereas I've talked and worked with other people in this economy who, when they go out to get a job, they're sort of in the state of just kind of throwing their resume out there and hoping that someone will find them, because no one knows who they are. And so I always talk about branding, but I said this in our slides at different conferences. Your brand is effectively your network. The people you know are the people who know you. So, you know, one of the other, the sort of flip side to branding is networking. You have to get out there and you have to get known by the people that you want to eventually hire you. You know, if you're an application security person, for example, you want to get out there and you want to know Jeremiah, and you want to know the other guys at White Hat, and you want to know the people who are doing AppSec at the big consulting firms, and you want to be on at your local OWASP meetings, and you want to talk to all these kinds of people, because those are the people who you're going to talk to when you have a career incident and when something happens that you're going to want to be looking for another job. Those are the people who you are branding to, and those are the people who are going to help you in the end.
And to add to that, you know, one of the bigger things in this industry that I think is going to become a lot more apparent as information security grows in popularity and more people are joining the profession, and it's, you know, information security is always consistently listed as one of the top 10 growth fields, is really differentiation amongst them their peers. In the past, it was really acceptable to be good. I think in this time, it's more acceptable. You know, the onus is becoming better, and it becomes better than, you know, in a comparison study, you have to be better than others. And when you start talking about your networking and you start talking about developing a network and utilizing a network, the one word that I think gets left out there is effective networking. You know, your network is only as good as when it needs to be called upon and as it can help you. So, you know, the idea, because our industry, there's a lot of information and it relies on the sharing of information. You know, most people in positions where they are hiring have the ability to kind of, you know, learn about the candidate prior to the interview itself. And if you have the ability to differentiate yourself and to make yourself known prior to the main event, as I call it, you probably have a leg up on your competition.
Let's talk about resumes briefly. Many people think that a resume is about listing every skill and accomplishment, but it's really about getting past the many quote-unquote gatekeepers in a hiring organization. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that when most people hire, they hire because of need, right? And unfortunately, a lot of the people who are reviewing the resumes, it's not necessarily the hiring manager in all organizations. A lot of times it's a person in human resources or internal recruitment that has a number of different responsibilities outside of information security recruitment. So one of the key ways of getting by these gatekeepers is to tailor your resume to specifically focus on the job that you are applying for, and to make sure that those skills are emphasized in that document. Pinpoint the skills that provide that reviewer that aha moment to say, oh, this person aligns directly with what we're searching for. And I think that that's really one of the bigger issues that people overlook, is that they create this generic resume, and they start focusing on things that are not really appropriate or focused upon the need that the hiring manager may or may not have, or the company may or may not have.
I always say that, you know, and this is this is sometimes misinterpreted, but I always say that your resume needs to tell a story. As an example, I was helping an information security person recently with their resume, and he was telling me that what his next job was, he really wanted to do people management, and he wanted to apply for, you know, security manager roles. And his career path had put him in the place where he was probably ready to do that, and he had all the qualifications, and he gave me his resume. And his resume spent all its time talking about how great a technical person he was. And there was maybe two or three points that mentioned what things he had done as far as managing or leading or mentoring people in his previous jobs. And when I asked him about it, he said, I asked him, so when you were at, you know, XYZ company, what did you do as far as managing people? And he told me all these different things, like, oh, I helped this person with that, and I managed these projects, and I did this, you know, X, Y, and Z. And all of these things were perfect points to illustrate why he would be a great information security manager, and none of them were on his resume. And so, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of job you want. If you've got any sort of diverse background, probably at all of the different jobs you've had and all of the different things that you've done, you have points that you can tell to illustrate the story of why you would be perfect for whatever job, whether it's a management job or a technical job or whatever. You probably have experience that's relevant to that from all the different things you've done. Those are the things that should be on your resume as you apply for that specific job.
All right, then, after all that, there's the interview. What makes an interview for an information security professional different from the run-of-the-mill interview?
Well, I think the big thing that separates our industry amongst others is that within the general skill set of information security, there are many subsets within that industry. And whether that is a technical skill, whether it's network security, application security, web security, or whether it's dealing with compliance or information risk management or frameworks, whatever that might be, within our industry, you know, we are not generally a keyword search business. You know, information security only tells part of the story. I think that when companies are hiring, again, they are hiring for specific pain points. And I think that when you walk into that interview, you really have to be prepared to discuss your strengths as it relates to the pain points that the company is experiencing, and to really be able to bring out that focus.
I think there's also another thing that is really important to note, especially in this time, is that in information security over the last few years, the competition has really improved. It used to be, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, if you had any background in InfoSec at all, you could pretty much fake your way through an interview. Now you're going to have 3 or 4 other people who are probably equally qualified on paper to be successful in almost any job. So it's really important as the industry matures that people work on their interview skills and they work on their, you know, that they practice these things before they go into an interview, because you can't just fake it the way we sort of used to be able to 7 or 8 years ago. The industry, and I think this is sort of a theme that Lee and I talk about a lot, the industry has lost a little bit of its privileged position. And whereas 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, the security group was very much sort of black box and viewed with some sort of black magic, like we were special, more and more we're evolving into just another department within IT. And so there are more and more qualified people. You know, who would have thought 10 or 15 years ago that students would come out of school with a degree in information security? That's happening now, and so you're seeing more and more qualified people in terms of traditional IT roles that are able to compete with the sort of old school hackery computer security people. And so those interview skills become more and more important.
I'm curious, guys, if there are any specific questions that come up during the interview process that information security pros should try to be ready for, anything that they might not think of that might cause them some problems.
mean, I think that, I think that a lot of those, there are always going to be difficult questions in interviews, but I think that when you're in the middle of a career incident, I think that the difficult questions kind of get magnified and they become more apparent. Like, questions like, why were you let go? Or, how long have you been searching? Or why is it taking you so long to find the job? Or a lot of people start talking about, well, why is this job appealing to you? So I think that there are a lot of these questions that go along with the fact that you're not employed that puts the heat on the interviewer, the interviewee, and the candidate in greater focus. And I think that when you're answering these questions, I think that the best way to do that is to, make sure that you answer your, answer honestly, basically to be able to show some examples from your past career behavior that might dispel some of these, some of these questions and be able to put the interviewer at ease. Just demonstrate your priorities. Your life might have changed and your priorities in finding a position might be more aligned with what this person is offering. And the fact that you're not employed right now has given you a chance to reflect and gain some more perspective. And I think that the last thing that really kind of comes down to that, is really when you're answering these questions, is to always be positive. Nobody really likes to hear a tale of woe, no matter how bad things are, no matter how, sometimes it comes down to wanting a job too much, and that desperation kind of sets in into the interview. And it becomes reflective in body language. It becomes reflective in attitude. You might even catch yourself in, kind of airing your dirty laundry. And I think that these are the things that really relate, to these difficult questions during a time when you are non-employed.
Finally, in a down market like this, there are a lot of overqualified security pros out there. How can those folks overcome that issue to simply land a job if they need to?
I guess that's the dreaded question, right? I mean, the logic is, wouldn't you rather have a more qualified person or an overqualified person than an underqualified person? However, we've been conditioned as hiring managers, I think that, during this time, people forget about, they forget what it's like to be on the other side of the desk. But some of the ways that people can avoid this is that they should focus on the frontline skills that apply to the job itself. They might want to emphasize their technical foundation. I think that at the core, the people who are being affected in this market are the ones that are kind of in the soft middle. They're not the well sought after leaders, and they're not the uber technical, but they're the ones that have kind of maybe let their technical skills lapse, and they're not at the point as a manager where they've developed their skill in that direction. So they kind of fall what I call into like information security career purgatory. But if you can start emphasizing your technical skills, if you can forget about, talking about big numbers, but really kind of stick, a million-dollar project, or I manage 30 people. But if you can start sticking to the results and de-emphasizing your title, when people overshoot their title, a lot of times it scares people on the other side. It starts thinking that, wow, this person's going to come after my job. I think that if you start focusing on, if people focus on what they've actually done, not what they oversaw or they directed or they managed, but what they actually did, I think that that really helps dispel this overqualified myth that's out there. And, I hate to say it as simple as this, but, you should really focus on the intangibles, things that you might not be able to measure on paper, your passion, your initiative, your drive. The things that motivate you. Some of those things that are at the purest form a lot of times lead people to hire people and not necessarily to hire paper.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the whole idea of being overqualified, and I've talked about this a lot at conferences I've done recently, because people get this all the time. And to me, if someone tells you you're overqualified, what they're really saying is, I don't understand why you want this job. And it's up to you to explain to the person why you want that job. It really does come down to who are you. Because when, say, I wanted to go take a job as a junior programmer, I've been in security for 10 or 12 years now and been a pen tester forever and led teams and done all kinds of stuff. Say I wanted to go take a job as a junior security analyst. The first question would be, Mike, why do you want to do that? And if I don't have a good answer for that, if my answer is, oh, well, I just want a job, then there's not really a good reason that I'm going to stick around. You have to have an answer to the question, why do you want to do that? If I said to you, oh, well, I'd really like to get back to my roots, and I'd really like to get back to having my hands on technology, and at the same time, you know, frankly, this is a job that I can do, and I can do well, and I can deliver for you, but I'd also like to have some extra time with my family, and I'm somebody who can come in here and can get this job done relatively quickly, relatively easily without any problems, and it lets me focus on other things in my life. I don't want to travel right now, and I want to learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu or something like that. If you have a story, if you can explain why you really want this job, the hiring manager can connect with that, and the hiring manager can decide on the trade-offs. If you don't have an answer, that's where the overqualified objection comes in. The question becomes, well, why would the person stick around? Why would the person want this job? Maybe they're going after my job. Ooh, because people get afraid. Really, the key to the overqualified objection is to have the manager understand why you really want this particular job.
All right, guys, as we wrap things up, any final thoughts for the information security job seekers out there?
Well, I think the best thing that I can say to folks is that, you know, just be aware of what's happening. You know, a lot of times people say, you know, it's not happening to me. And the truth is that, yes, you know, this might be a situation where you are insulated and it's not affecting you. But look around. It's probably affecting people around you, people who you consider your peers, maybe even people who you consider your mentors. And the truth is that it's not about what's happening right now, because right now it might be a little bit too late. But if you make the investments in your career now and you start planning accordingly, and you start building your network and building differentiation and building your brand, these are types of things that may never affect you. And the better you plan, the better off you'll probably be in the future.
Lee Kushner and Mike Murray, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
Once again, you can get more security careers information and learn about Mike and Lee's Career Incident Response podcast seminar series for information security pros by visiting searchsecurity.com/careerhelp. Again, that's searchsecurity.com/careerhelp. And don't forget, we have many more information security podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Eric Parazo. Stay safe out there.